Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 74 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. In this episode, I get a chance to talk to David Sandusky from Beast Craft Barbecue in St. Louis, Missouri. This one is just a great one. We talk for a while about St. Louis barbecue, what it means, about snoot, something I had never heard about. I won't go into it so that you can learn about it. It's very interesting, something I definitely want to try. David is just a passionate guy, and he reached out before our interview and said, is it okay if I swear a little, because he gets so passionate. He just wants to express himself the way that he usually expresses himself. And I said, of course, I don't want to hold back. And there's no holding back in this interview. I know you're going to love it. You're going to really fall in love with who he is, his passion, how he treats his employees are empowered, about his menu, about where he sources his food, about his new location that's opening up very shortly, about just everything in between, about being a father. I know you're gonna love this. I just want to jump right into this. If you're liking these, please subscribe. That way you can get all the back episodes. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this. Good afternoon. How are you doing, David?
Great.
How does your day look today? What's your day like? What's a usual day for you? That's not. I think you were dealing with your child today, right?
Yeah, I got a new baby boy.
Congratulations, Anders
David Sandusky. Yeah.
Edgar David Sandusky.
Anders. Yeah.
Oh, Anders. That's an awesome name. Oh, that's killer. How is he?
He was about 2 weeks early, but he's as healthy as can be. So it's all you can ask for, right?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Are you staying up late? Are you, like, I'm sure your schedule is pretty crazy as it is. It is.
And he requires a lot, but I mean, all the newborns do. He's 3 days old, so
we haven't
slept a week, but we're good.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's killer. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations again. That's killer. So what's a usual business day like for you?
First thing I do is make a list of what I need to accomplish for the day. You know, I'll be eating breakfast or doing whatever and just kind of, creating a list. You never accomplish all of it, but, you pick two or three things that you think you can get done, and hopefully you get one of them done.
That's actually a really good idea. I don't think a lot of people do that, and I think it's great. Whenever I have done that, it's smart. It helps you get some focus for the day.
Yeah. It's really good for me, because if I don't do that, then my whole day is just kind of aimless, and it dictates to me what I'm going to do or what I'm going to accomplish, which is typically nothing if I don't have a plan. So I always try to have that plan. And then I love going in the restaurant. I don't work shifts anymore, because the business pushed me out, essentially. Not to say that I'm not there. I'm there every day. I'm present. I'm focused on team building. I'm focused on management. I'm focused on consistency. But the business dictated to me that it wasn't good enough anymore for me to be the pit master, to be the chef, to be the general manager, to be the owner all at the same time. It just wasn't doable. It wasn't something that was beneficial for the restaurant. I ended up choking the business out by just trying to do everything myself. And so every time I replaced myself just a little bit, my revenue spiked, believe it or not.
That's great.
As a restaurateur, that I can tell others is that you got to have an exit strategy, and you've got to have, like, you know, you got to be able to impact the store every time that you're there. And if you're doing those positions and trying to do it all yourself, you just can't.
That's insane advice, and it probably in the end it'll give you more satisfaction, because you would drive yourself crazy trying to do everything.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was working 4 a.m. to midnight daily in 2015. I had one day off the whole year. And that's what it takes to have a very successful restaurant. You're putting in the time and the effort. But I was just able to build a team of really, really talented people that had my vision. And now we're able to go forward in that aspect. And the restaurant is 1,000 times better than it would have been if I would have just made sure that I was cooking everything, or that I was, doing everything. It's so much better for the customer, because, and this is what I'm talking about. The business really, really told me that that's where I needed to be. I needed to be with the customer. They needed to see the beard. They needed to, be a part of what was happening. And if I'm sweating and doing all this stuff all the time, then I don't have that time for them, and I don't have time for that promotion and management.
Do you find that you can you engage with the customers more because of this?
Absolutely. I engage with the customers all the time, and it's super, super beneficial for the business. And so I feel really bad for those that have that mentality that their resources are so low that they can't fathom pulling themselves out. I would challenge them to say, if you're not doing that, you're certainly not reaching your potential of what the rest of restaurant's capable of. And, I've realized that I have to be a better team builder now than a pit master.
That's fascinating. You never would have thought that.
No, not at all. Not at all. But I try to surround myself with people that are better than me, and I don't care. It doesn't all have to be my way. It just has to be the best way. So these managers, these staff members, these people, they will go to war for me because I give them that much control, and I allow them to bend and break our policies and procedures as long as they don't affect the quality of the product or the service. So they can always make a decision that's great for the restaurant, even if it bends a rule. They just have to report it on the other side, and they say, hey, this is what I did and why. And we'll talk about whether or not it was the right decision. But, sometimes following the rules is just not the right thing in the context of the moment. And so I give them that control, and they will absolutely completely invest themselves in the vision because of that.
And you've empowered them because of that, for
absolutely.
Sure,
without a doubt. Yeah, and not everything on the menu is mine anymore. There's several items. The pit boss that I have, he does a better brisket than I do. You know, why wouldn't
that's I? That's a big thing to say.
I have a new sauce that's about to go to retail that I didn't invent. Another employee did.
Wow.
I'm going to give him a bonus, a royalty for it, and we're going to take it to market because it's that good.
That is rad. That's great.
They have that reason. They have that ability to kind of add to the legend that has become Beast Craft Barbecue, and so that's a really long way to answer your question. I'm certainly there all the time, but not in those capacities. And the business is way better for it.
And see, that's also another reason why I love the barbecue world. I love meeting people like you, and I love sharing the vision that people have for their restaurants. But also, I think what you're doing too is you're teaching people that are watching this that might want to open up a restaurant someday or just starting, and they feel like they have to do everything. And it's like you could do it in small increments, but it's important to be able to step back and look how happy you are. Look how you can leave the restaurant for a day and not feel like things are going to fall apart.
And I can do other things. I'm working on a book right now. I can do my radio show. I can do all kinds of
your new restaurant.
Because I've got a new restaurant on the way later this year. Because I've decided that I'm going to be always at the forefront of anything that I put my hands to, and so now at this point I've gotten to where I can get with cooking in pits and barbecue. Not that there's not more to learn, but I've gotten to a point where now I'm okay. I can allow other people to impart. I train them well. And then I can go do these other things that are fun. I can do the TV spots. I can do blogs like this. I can do all these other things that are not just beneficial for me, but beneficial to the people that work for me in the business. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense to act like you're the only one that can do something. You're the only one that can touch the food or whatever. I would venture to say that If you can't teach people how to do what you do, you're kind of a bitch. I'm being serious. I hate to put it that way, but if you're just that guy that's like, man, I have to hold everything in and I can't teach anybody my rub wraps recipe and I can't do this and I can't do that, get out of the business.
Uh-huh, I agree.
Especially in barbecue, you're in the wrong field. You have to pay everything forward. Now, for me, it's about creating a space for the people that are imparting in my business to do bigger things than they've ever done.
And that's a life thing. Like what you're doing is you're sharing that for their life too. You're absolutely bettering their life, your life. Isn't that the whole goal of all this in life?
Why does that hurt me?
It doesn't.
Because somebody's going to put the same amount of ancho in their rub that I do. Who cares?
Exactly.
Really. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what's funny is when I talked to Billy Durney a while back, he said secrets are for suckers. And it's just, I agree with it. I think it's sad that like the people that hold see a lot of times in the competition circus, I think that people hold have secrets because it's a different world, I think.
Well, it's gotten that way. Now everybody's worried about Shiggin and whatever. But personally, I agree with Billy. I think if you're not imparting to the next generation, then you're not building a legacy.
For sure.
I'm not here to make the 10 bucks on a pork platter. You know, I'm out to be the best at what I do. Mm-hmm. And I want others to take what they can take from me and do bigger things than what I've been able to do.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I want that?
Yeah. And you want that for your family someday. That's what you would think.
Absolutely. But there are some that are really, really tight about it. Mm-hmm. And I understand in the competition circuit, there's money involved and there's, as far as the winnings and things like that. And, they can be really tight about it.
Maybe it might be incremental. I don't know. Well, did you grow up in St. Louis?
I did. I was actually born in Rockford, okay. Illinois, but, my father was fired by Reagan back in 81. He's one of the air traffic controllers that went on strike and was fired by the president. And so
I was talking about that a couple months ago.
Yeah. St. Louis ever since, been in and out of a lot of hotels, fine dining, things like that. I spent about 10 years in fine dining, and just kind of fell out of love with it. I got to a point where I just realized that no one gives a shit how many different ways you can cook foie gras. No one cares. And especially in the Midwest, no one cares.
True.
It's all about impact and the bite. And I wanted to do something that was impactful. I wanted to do something that was going to really meet people where they were. I have a background in theology, and so I'm really, really interested in how people connect with their street food, their basic, type of items that they cook at home. You see this worldwide, and barbecue has a lot of different faces around the world.
For sure.
But you always see how the foods that are produced in those areas connect with the land and the farming, and then in turn connect with the politics and the religion, and that to me is fascinating.
So fascinating.
And so the closest thing that we have to that in the States is barbecue.
Without a doubt.
There's all cultures and subcultures and all these things, and they become denominations. They become their own type of religion in a sense. Everybody's got their restaurant that does it right, or their corner of the country that does it right, or their uncle that does it right in the backyard.
I never really thought of it that way. Maybe I haven't a little bit, but that is so true. And that's a great way to put it. I love that.
So barbecue is absolutely fascinating to me. And I'm ultra competitive. I never set out to be number two. I'm never happy being number two. I want to be the best at anything that I'm doing. And so I picked something that was hard. I picked it because it was oversaturated. I picked it because there are a ton of guys at the top already.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to come in and punch St. Louis barbecue in the mouth and just, create something different, something that's a little more soulful, something that just can you can tell when you come into the restaurant, you eat a plate of our food that, this is my point of view on the plate. This is my vision. This is my love, my heart, my family, all those things. And I think it's so easy in the restaurant world to lose that.
Just to mail it in, yeah.
It comes to be about costs or percentages and, do you have enough clients and all these things. For me, I just want to worry about the plate. I just want to, obviously we want to make money, but if we just worry about the plate, the rest of that stuff falls into place.
That's so
true.
We
just want the best thing out there all the time. And so
was this 2006 that you were thinking about this, like 2005, 2006?
That was about the time I started in barbecue. I had left the fine dining world and went into barbecue in 07. I love being able to take the fundamentals that I learned in fine dining and passing that forward into barbecue. There's a lot of people that think that it's really easy. It's not. I love the Arby's commercial from last year. I was like, oh, brisket? No problem. 13 hours, open the door. It's done. You know what I'm saying?
That made me so angry.
Yeah. It really takes a lot of effort, a lot of skill, a lot of talent, a lot of innate instinct, yeah. Right? That's learned over time. And so
– And dealing with frustration again and again.
Yeah. I mean, because
– As you make mistakes. Because
You don't get a good brisket unless you've already dropped the ball on 100 of them.
Easily.
You know? Like you just have to have the bad brisket in order to get to the good brisket.
Easily. Yes, for sure.
So it takes a lot of time, and it takes someone who's willing to be humble and willing to learn, which honestly is difficult for me sometimes. But
it's difficult for all of us. People won't admit it.
But. Yeah, it's hard. Sometimes you just have to buck up and open your ears and shut your mouth, you know. And I think that's when people are trying to pay forward, like we talked about. That's what you have to be, you know. You just listen.
So in that transition period, how did that go to that transition period to a restaurant? What was that?
So I worked with another barbecue restaurant for about 4 years.
Okay.
I learned a lot of what not to do. I learned, you know, kind of my own ways of being able to create something that was outstanding. I was never really a fan of the barbecue that I was doing, but I was taking my time, mm-hmm. and I was learning and I was understanding and I was, you know, figuring out a game plan. Spent about 4 years there and then got into consulting, where I would help new brick and mortar barbecue restaurateurs.
Okay.
And then from there, which is kind of backwards because typically you would have your own restaurant before you do that. But
of course, yeah.
But after that, I got an opportunity and I couldn't pass it up. I finally got the restaurant at the price that I needed. I've been wanting to open a restaurant since I was 15 years old.
Wow.
So I finally got the opportunity and took it. Thanks to my wife, you know, who helped me get there. So.
And how did you choose that location? Was that somewhere that you had been looking at before?
Well, the location is an institution in Belleville. It was a little diner that was called the Hi-Ho Cafe.
Oh.
And it's been around since 1957.
Okay.
So it's an old diner. If you can imagine a really shitty Waffle House, that's about what that looked like, okay. Right? It was absolutely disgusting. It was, it had grease built up on gas valves that had been there for 40 years. It was horrendous, but we took our time, we cleaned it up, you know, and we took it over and now we're a new institution there in Belleville where, you know, Food and Wine just named us best in.
I know. Congratulations. I was going to bring that up. That's fantastic. That's how it reminded me of you guys. Is I saw that and I thought, okay, I've been meaning to contact David.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We're very fortunate. I mean, there's certainly luck involved, but I would say I can tell you that we may not be better than anyone, but we work as hard, if not harder, than anyone. I can tell you that.
That's awesome. So, did you go around at all into regionally, did you go around to, or did you already have that knowledge base from what you were doing? Like when you set up your menu at the beginning, had you gone to Texas? Had you gone around to see different things?
No, I really didn't have the resources to.
Okay.
So I took what I had learned in the area. I wanted to do something that paid homage to St. Louis barbecue because most don't know, but there's a really strong background for St. Louis barbecue. Mm-hmm. In the area, and most people have no idea what that means. Barbecue here is very different than it is in other parts of the country. So, you know, we'll get a lot of restaurants that come in and they're like, oh, we're Memphis style and we're Texas style and we're Carolina style and all that stuff because, you know, St. Louis, it has this style, but it's never really been at the forefront until now.
What would you say St. Louis style is?
So it's usually defined by cuts first, which consists of pork steaks, number one.
Okay.
Right. You don't find pork steaks anywhere else, though I believe there are some here and there that are starting to dabble in other markets. Mm-hmm. Snoot is a huge thing here. Are you aware of what that is?
I've heard it. Yeah, please tell me because I feel like a jackass for not knowing.
So it's the mask. It's the face of the pig.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll cut the nose itself off and then trim the insides. We'll actually take the jowl out because it'll burn.
Okay.
And some of the tendons and things. So what you're left with is skin and then fat right there in the mask. We'll score it so we get these little pockets of fat, little squares of fat through it, and then cook it at about 325 degrees. And it creates this really, really hard, almost hard enough to break your teeth, like crackling.
Okay.
So what we do is we'll take some barbecue sauce and we'll simmer it in the sauce for about 5 minutes, right? And it loosens it up just enough to where it's palatable.
Okay.
But doesn't soften it too much to where it's rubbery. So you get this hot pork rind kind of thing going on. That's absolutely outstanding.
Oh, it sounds like ridiculous.
It's kind of an acquired taste to some, but to me, it's my favorite thing on the menu.
What's the acquired, the part that's acquired? Is it very like a strong pig flavor that people might not be used to? Or
it does. It's very rich. It has some very rich and very salty notes on its own.
Okay.
Like
the fat part, is that like lardo, or is it like a?
Well, it's an interesting texture. If you can imagine biting into a really thick cracker, but then those little squares that are created into scoring create little gushing fat pockets on top.
That's so awesome. It's
very, very interesting texture, and it's not for everyone, but it is St. Louis all the way. And honestly, there's a lot of St. Louis restaurants here that stay away from it because it's hard to cook. It's hard to do well, and it's, you know, it's.
Okay. Well, I want to try it as soon as I visit. I'm going to try it. That's awesome.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Besides that, you know, we're a melting pot here in a country that's a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so St. Louis is all about stealing from other towns, and we've done that with our sauces especially. You know, we usually see tomato based sauces that we've stolen from Kansas City, those types of styles, but then. They'll be a little thinner. They'll be a little more vinegary, a little sweeter. And they'll be typically used for grilling and basting. It's not necessarily something that you just pour. Though I'll give you this. St. Louis per capita eats more sauce than any other city in the country. But really, it's about throwing it on the grill. And it's about caramelizing those sugars into.
Okay, gotcha.
And so because it's so thin especially, it starts to dehydrate into the meat. And becomes part of it, so it's not necessarily sauced. It's just this this new cherry hue that you may give the meat that it didn't have before, and the flavor develops in a much different way with the caramelization of the sugars. So, you know, I'll be the first one to tell you, St. Louis sauces, those styles are not always great on the table. I don't know if you're familiar with Malls. Mm-hmm. That's a St. Louis brand.
Oh yeah,
right. That's we love that stuff because it's a St. Louis original. But let's call a spade. This stuff tastes like shit. That's why we throw a bunch of Budweiser and brown sugar in it and a few onions or something, and you know, create something new. That's St. Louis. That's who we are. That's that culture.
So it's not like overt, like so the like if you got ribs, they're not going to be overtly saucy, like dripping with sauce. But they're probably cooked with sauce.
Yeah, I mean, there's some around that do that, But we find that at least, and not everybody will share this opinion, but for us, we believe that this is more of a grilling city than it's ever been a smoking city. So we connect to that with that grilling and basting and kind of paying homage to that steak and potatoes type of background. You know, there was a time where St. Louis was steakhouses and Italian restaurants, and that's it.
That's wild. So what was your menu? Is your menu the same as it was at the beginning? It's been 4 years, so is it pretty much the same, or did you guys upgrade different meats?
We've changed quite a bit. The whole idea was to get started and then really start to become who we wanted to be. And so, you know, we've lost some clients along the way during that growth process, but for us, like I said, we always set out to be the best that we could be within the context of what we were doing. We're not here to tell anybody we're better than them or anything like that. We're just saying that, you know, whatever we put on the menu is going to be the absolute best that we can produce it, or it's not going to go up there. And so we go through this rigorous testing every day where we check, you know, everything top to bottom in the menu. And if anything does not come out our best, it's not even a question of if we can sell it. It's a question of, are we representing ourselves at the highest level? If not, we take the loss.
That's so smart.
It's
hard. It's hard. It's smart.
There might be a day where you lose, you know, a couple thousand dollars in brisket, and you just have to figure out another way to use it because it's not going on the plate, you know. But so we've changed the menu quite a bit over time. We've kind of gotten sharper at what we do and found things that the clientele like and, you know, things like that. But we're ever changing. It's something next year we may be completely different.
That's right.
We're always in a process of picking an item and You know, we'll say, you know, we'll look at the menu and go, okay, what is the worst thing up there? And then it might, in our opinion, be really good. But if it's the worst thing up there, we're going to go reformulate it and just start over.
That's very cerebral of you guys. Like it keeps you guys on your toes and makes sure that you're always constantly evolving, especially with the customers and yourselves.
Yeah, we never want to rest on our laurels. We know where that road leads. We want to maintain that quality all the time. And so it allows us to evolve. It gives us this ability to change the menu daily. You know, and we can just do whatever we want, you know, and that to me is kind of the whole gimmick. It's the whole niche that we're trying to fill. We call it all killer, no filler, right? It means that literally everything that we're doing is our best. But what we call it behind the scenes, we call it fuck you barbecue. Because you know what I mean by that? These people are my friends and family. You know, the other restaurateurs here in town, competition cooks, these are my friends, you know, and I'm certainly not making a stance against any of them because we're all in this together. What I'm saying is that don't come into my restaurant with any preconceived notions of what barbecue is supposed to be, or that I'm supposed to be like anyone else, or sauce it like someone else, or, you know, or that I'm supposed to follow some criteria from a competition society or something like that. I don't give a fuck. because what happens is people will go out on the circuit and they'll be given this criteria at the beginning of the year and say, this is what you need to fulfill. And we're going to judge you on how well you fulfill this criteria every weekend. Mm-hmm. And they'll start to use terminology on the circuit like, is this offensive? Is it going to offend the judges? Is this sweetness going to offend them? Is it too spicy or whatever? I'm here to tell you, I want you to come into my restaurant and be offended. I want you to be pissed when you sit down and you're experiencing something that is just shaking down your entire idea of what this is supposed to be or the quality that this is supposed to be. And if you don't like it, it's okay. It's saturated. Go to the guy down the street. He's doing a great job too. Go visit.
But they're really not going to not like it. Good food. It's like, well, I guess, but also too, it could, yeah, like you said, it shakes convention. So
yeah, it's a little polarizing. It's, it can certainly kind of shake things up and make people a little they wonder, you know, why do we only do our rib tips this way, or why do, you know, like I said, there's the guy down the street. It's fine. We don't have to. We can be friends. We don't have to do business together. I'm fine with that.
I want to break down your menu because it's fascinating. It is so unique to barbecue restaurants. But the first couple of weeks, how was that? Was that nerve-wracking? Were you nervous? Were people embracing what you were doing at first, or how was it?
So, I should tell you, the first 3 days we were open, we had a static menu on the wall, and it was beautiful. My wife created it. It was hundreds of dollars to get done, and it had these wonderful appetizers and sides and desserts and all the stuff. Well, listen, the day we opened, I had already been awake for like 75 hours just trying to prepare. I finished the sauce at 4 a.m. the day we were opening. And I couldn't get it all done. Even with the staff that I had in the opening, I felt in the first 3 days that I was a slave to a menu. And I'm the kind of guy where I'm not going to get pushed around by anybody, let alone my own fucking menu, you know? So I realized that what I was doing was too complicated. And then I just needed to concentrate on the quality of the product and less about having something for everyone or, you know, kind of making plays from my fine dining background and things like that. I just scrapped it. 3 days in, we ripped them off the wall. Wow. And I went to my wife and I said, we're throwing some paper bags up there. And we're writing the menu on there, and they can take it or leave it. But this is what we're doing. I'm just gonna say this is what's on the menu today. Is what it is.
So were people liking that the first 3 days? I know in your soul you weren't liking it, but were people coming? Were you selling out those days, or was it kind of a weird? Were people not?
It was really difficult because the menu wasn't complete. We had it up there, but we didn't have half the menu because we couldn't keep up with it.
Gotcha.
There was some planning issues and things like that, and you know, some first time restaurateur type things that
we learned
as a business, and
you need to learn those things. It's important.
Yeah, and I got to a point where I just said, I'm just going to do this from the hip. That's where I operate best. And it's going to be what it is. And so it's changed pretty dramatically. We now are the only ones in the region doing Wagyu brisket. And of course, we do it the best with Snake River Farms.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
We're actually the only restaurant in the nation that uses Compart Family Farms for our pigs across the entire menu. We're the farm's biggest customer. 10% of what they produce comes to me.
Wow.
And this is a sustainable farm where they're feeding them well, they're treating them well, they're harvesting them well. They care about their animals. I was just on the farm a few weeks ago. But if you're not familiar with Compart, a lot of guys watching this, they probably know who I'm talking about, especially comp guys. These are the pigs that are winning championships at Memphis in May and the American Royal. These pigs are so well marbled that it's almost like a Wagyu cow would be. They're deep red in color, and they have this super, super clean flavor profile, something that's way different than what you could get in a grocery store or from
– or almost any restaurant, really.
From most of the restaurants, because they take the approach of buying the cheapest things that they can at the commodity level, and then doing the most that they possibly can to them to make them taste great. We take the opposite approach. I want to buy the very best things that I possibly can, and I want to do literally nothing to them, just the bare minimum.
Just to highlight the meat itself.
That's it. Let the quality of the meat shine through. And that is where we've filled the niche. To give you an example, when we started testing the butts from Compart, we put them in the pits. We had a rub on them like we had done with the commodity pigs and the local pigs. We had tried a lot of different pigs. And these Duroc butts, when we took them out, we realized that our rub was making them worse. We had to complete – and I love my rub. We had to completely pull the rub off of them and put them in with straight salt and pepper. Wow. That's it. So that wasn't to be, you know, oh, we're like Texas and we just do salt and pepper. No, literally the pigs didn't need anything else. They just, you know, so it's just smoked salt and pepper on the menu. And it tastes amazing.
You know? And see, that's something that you're giving it. See, that really pisses me off because I'm so far away from where you are right now, because it sounds like a place that you'd want to go twice a week, three times a week, because the quality of the meat is, and there's a lot of places like you could just tell that they're buying lower quality meat. It sounds like your margins are maybe a little slimmer, but you're able to put out product that you could put your heart behind.
Absolutely. And again, yes, absolutely. The product is more expensive. We yield less than the other barbecue restaurants do. We have to compete in the same market. Even, you know, this stuff can cost two or three times what the commodity pigs are charging, but you know, we don't charge two or three times the price. We eat it because we're just out to be the best at what we do. We have the ability to take some of those percentage points out of the bottom line, and that's fine. I didn't open this restaurant to be a millionaire from this one location. I opened it up because I had this like fire in my gut that would not allow me to do anything else. And so, you know, we just focused on the plate and everything else fell into place, and we're profitable and we're happy. Our families are taken care of. The 30 families that work for us are taken care of.
That's huge. That's really important.
Yeah, we're doing it with sustainable farming, and it's beautiful.
And so let's kind of go through your menu, because I know that I'm actually looking at it right now because it's making me even more angry. But so you kind of have a lot of the staples that maybe a Texas place would have, but then you've put your own twist and added. And so you have turkey breasts, you have pork, you have Texas belly. What is Texas belly?
So Texas belly is an item that really helps differentiate us and who we are. This is another item that just shows the quality of the meat. This is actually a Duroc belly that's uncured, that we smoke like brisket, and it gets that dark brisket, you know, crust on it, that bark, and then we just slice it, and it's incredible. Oh, it's so rich and fatty.
Unctuous, probably.
Oh man, it's amazing. It's so rich. You know, like I said, it's just about that impact in the bite, and we're able to create that impact just from the animal itself. And that's one of those items that shows it off so well.
So that is really- so it's not beef, it's pork. Oh God, that sounds so good. And barbacoa, are you doing like a traditional barbacoa or?
No, we're not burying goats in the ground in leaves. That's not.
Well, I guess I don't mean 100% traditional, but yeah.
But you know, it started to morph into some different definitions here in the States, and really what it it's a braised brisket, and we'll do it with a little bit of cumin. There's a little bit of allspice in there and things like that, and it really has this this really spice forward, beautiful flavor. And we'll actually use Scheinerbock for the braise. So we have that like nice dark malty kind of flavor profile. It's really, really good. We do pickled onions with it, a little cilantro, a little cotija, and over a fresh tortilla. It's pretty good.
That's pretty ridiculous. And you have the pork steak, which you had talked about before. You can get half steaks and whole steaks.
Yeah, the pork steak is our big thing. That's what we're known for more than anything else. We sell more pork steaks than anything. We go through, I want to say, almost 1,000 pork steaks a week.
Wow.
They're just constantly moving. It's an incredible product. You know, it's actually a blade steak. It's cut straight from the butt.
Okay.
You'll find some shoulder bone in each of those steaks. We'll smoke them until they're tender. It's a very, very small window, mind you, because they have to be tender enough for us to put our finger through it barely.
Okay.
But still have enough character and integrity to be able to grill and baste this item on the grill before it goes out. So it's a real fine line, but you could cut this thing with a plastic spoon by the time
that's awesome. Out.
Absolutely amazing. And it has that dehydrated basted crust in it that we talked about earlier.
It's insane. Are you doing kielbasa? Are you doing any other sausage or just kielbasa?
We usually just stick with kielbasa. Okay. We've done boudin before. We've done some different Polish variations and some things like that. But we love our kielbasa recipe. It's the best that we could put it out. And
that's unique to a lot of barbecue places too. And that's I love kielbasa, but I don't know one place I've had it.
Yeah, it's a little different, and that's why we chose it. We had a great recipe, and it was going to be a little bit different. It was something that you could make a meal out of. It wasn't just you're getting meat and then you're getting an accompanying sausage. This is a sausage that can be your meal. And that's why we picked it.
And it is, and eating a kielbasa, I've made kielbasa cabbage dishes with bacon, and it's so filling and so fulfilling too. It's great comfort food. Now with it seems like you have a great amount of sides too. Do you guys fluctuate with those, like change those sides? Is that something that you, because I know it's probably chef driven, so you probably change it.
We do. We do have static sides. We've got the usual ones that you see in barbecue. We've got a slaw on the menu. We've got a potato salad on the menu. That, by the way, secret menu. You can order the potato salad seared. And it really amplifies the
flavors. That's awesome.
And the lemon. And we have a 4-day processed pit bean on the menu. It's a real pain in the ass. We feature no cans, no freezers, no microwaves in the restaurant. So this is a dry bean that's soaked overnight. It's seasoned the next day. It's simmered. And then it's smoked on the oak underneath the brisket, so it takes in those drippings.
I love that.
And then we let it sit for a day because it's kind of like chili. It's better mm-hmm. the second. So a lot of resources go into those beans. They're a pain in the ass, but they're a spectacle.
They're
for
damn
sure.
good. I'm sure they're damn good.
Not a bean like it, that's for sure.
Oh, gosh. So what are your hours? When do you open?
We're open at 11 o'clock until we sell out.
Okay.
We do have a 9 o'clock cutoff, but we'll typically sell out before 9.
And are you if someone crews in around 6-7 o'clock, can they get pretty much the full menu or close to the full menu?
It depends on the day. I would say by 7 o'clock they can at least get half the menu typically. But every day is an educated guess. We would love to make sure that everybody has the same menu through the entire night.
But that's hard.
The problem is that barbecue on day two sucks.
No barbecue. It's not good.
If we were to do that, we would have to serve it in the same capacity the next day all the time, and we just won't do it. We just won't. There's some people that are frustrated by that. They don't get it. They, especially in this area, they don't necessarily understand it. they don't have a Franklin's up here, you know?
No, it's the people don't understand Los Angeles or almost anywhere else other than Texas, it seems.
There's other restaurants here in town that sell out, but, you know, especially on the Illinois side of the St. Louis metro area, people are a little unsure of the process. And so they'll come in and they'll be upset. They'll be like, how can you be a barbecue restaurant and not have ribs? I got to tell them, well, I mean, we did. You just didn't get here in time.
Exactly.
You know, this is what you don't understand. It's not a mismanagement thing. It's just a matter of us being busy enough to sell out. And that's great. That means that I can provide you with the best product.
Fresh.
So I encourage them, you know, quit being whiny and just look at the menu and pick something else that you're going to enjoy, because I guarantee you everything up there is at its peak, you know.
And you'll want to fall in love with something new. How great would that be? Yeah,
exactly. Please try something else, because I guarantee you, you're going to like it.
And are you open seven days a week?
7 days a week. Yeah.
That's there too with your, that's good that you were able to take a step back, because that's a lot.
Absolutely. And now I got a new baby boy for it. Yeah. Now we had our daughter and then we had the restaurant, and it's been quite a few years in between. So we just got our opportunity to have another child, and we were happy to get it done.
Are people lining up? Is it like do they queue up in a line? Is that kind of how you do it?
They do. Yeah. We'll have a line, typically that, they'll line up at the door right at open. And it's certainly not what you would experience, you know, like I said, at a Franklin's or something like that. It's not like it's going down the street, but yeah, every day we've got a line.
But if you came in, you can get it. You can get through the line in a half an hour, right? Roughly.
Roughly a half hour easily.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So tell me about your new projects. We could probably talk another hour about your restaurant, but I wanted to talk about, you said you have a book as coming up, like you're starting to work on that. And then your new restaurant too is that in a specific location? That's an up and coming area.
It is. The Grove is it was a neighborhood that was already up and coming, and then it hit another growth spurt.
Oh, gotcha.
It's now, witnessing 5 new luxury apartment complexes being built within the neighborhood.
Wow.
It's right across the highway from the Cortex, which is a section of the city that's known as the Silicon Valley of the Midwest.
Huh.
Microsoft has a headquarters there, DuPont, Square, a lot of other companies all in within that Cortex area. It's kind of midtown. It's not downtown. It's a little west, but I mean, the area is incredible. It's just so booming. We're seeing all these new houses being built in there. And this is an area that's known for, you know, some hard times. And so to see the money flowing through there and kind of creating this new...
That revitalization is nice.
Yeah, revitalization is great. So I think we picked the right neighborhood.
Oh, that sounds ideal. That sounds like they'll need a place like you.
Yeah, and the neighborhood is almost completely devoid of barbecue. So, you know, it became an easy thing to decide.
Is it going to be, are they containers? I was looking at some renderings. Is it a container restaurant? Is that what it is?
No, actually there is a brewery being built in the Grove that is doing the container.
That's thing. What that is. Okay. That's what I saw. Yeah. Okay.
I believe that's a Gerard Kraft project.
Okay. Now are you building it from the ground up, or are you renovating an old place?
We're renovating an old building. It's about 6,000 square feet, which is way different than what we're used to. We've got about 2,400 square feet now.
6,000 is huge. That's good.
Yeah. But it's going to allow us so much versatility. You know, we're not just carbon copying here. I can't necessarily do that. I don't know. I want to do something different. I want to challenge myself. I don't want to just, like I said, rest on my laurels. So, you know, we'll have a menu in the dining room that will be, it'll be close. It'll share the heart of Beast Craft Barbecue. But it's going to be fed by its own butchery in-house.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll also have a small retail presence with the butchery. Nothing big. It's just going to be a place where you can come through, you know, leave the restaurant, maybe take home some bacon that was cured in-house from Compart, you know, buy a local vine of tomatoes and some bread from a local baker. Go home and make your BLTs tomorrow.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. We'll have a few different cuts available, loins and things like that, but very, very small butchery presence for the Grove. But the part that I'm most excited about actually is a space that we're calling the Scullery with a K.
Okay.
Because we're extra. And that space is really a chef's table room that will seat about 36 people. It'll feature a live fire grill, a big, huge live fire unit. It's insane what this thing looks like. I can't wait to get it in there. But it's a place where I can kind of use my creativity and do some things in barbecue that no one has done or is doing, and just kind of, I guess, get out of my boredom, mm-hmm. would be the best way to put it. I can do pop-ups there. I can do collabs with other chefs there. You know, maybe I want to open a chop house in that room every weekend.
That's so.
It would be a full service type setting. So definitely a different experience than what they would have in the barbecue restaurant. But yeah, there's a lot going on there besides the catering and the, you know, all that stuff.
It's perfect timing to have another child during all this craziness. That's awesome. But that sounds like that's how you like your life too. Like you want to keep moving and doing lots of things. That's kind of what keeps you going.
I've been told I thrive in chaos.
So do I. It seems like, I hate to admit it. Like I think I need a lot of stuff going on or I feel like I'm super lazy. Yeah.
Yeah. We almost, it looked like, the restaurant was going to open the same week that we were going to have this child. It's been pushed back a little bit. Those things happen.
When do you think this fall? Is it looking for like this fall?
Yeah, it's looking like November probably at this point. But massive project, man. I'm excited to get it done.
That is awesome. And the scullery, that part will be probably – is that going to open at the same time or kind of more early next year?
We're not sure yet. We're kind of looking at that right now and determining if we just want to get going or if we're going to wait a little bit longer and open it all at the same time.
Kind of sounds like an area that people would want to have for holidays too. You could put together some interesting events and things.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
That's awesome. And the book, is that something that's kind of super early on?
Yeah, very, very. I started writing it while I was in the hospital with the wife.
Okay. Yeah. So super early on.
I sat there, you know, she's in labor and I'm just sitting there going, you know what? I'm just going to start writing a book.
Is it a book about you, like your life, or is it a book more like, is it like a recipes and different?
Right now, the idea is just to, to share some recipes and things like that, but it's more theory for barbecue. And I think it's going to be more of a challenge as a piece to the status quo of what barbecue is, I think.
That's great. Oh, that's awesome. I can't wait for that. So maybe next year or late next year. things like that, unless you're going to do some like random do-it-yourself ebook, it usually takes a little bit of time. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I love what you're doing from afar. I can't wait to visit. You're making me actually consider moving to the Midwest. I'm thinking about moving to St. Louis.
You got to come try it, man.
I'll come out before, hopefully I'll get a chance to come out. I'm going out to Texas, so maybe I can kind of pull a swing and then come back down to LA.
Yeah, do that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Have a great week. Congratulations on the birth, and you take care, get some rest if you can at all, and I'll visit you in a couple months.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks so much.